My name is Scott Finn. I'm news director at WUSF Public Media. And introduce yourself very quickly and tell us a little bit about what you do.
My name is Peter Schorsch. I'm the executive editor of stpetersblog.com, one of the best and most influential political websites in Florida. I cover state, national, and local politics.
And Peter, just for the sake of disclosure, you also do political work for some candidates here in Florida, right?
I am a political consultant, and I work mostly with state legislative candidates. I do a lot of social networking consulting for those candidates. I work for political parties and interest groups. But yes, I have a full-time career as a political consultant working on both sides of the aisle.
Well, we are in the last days of the state legislature this year, and I know that you've been following them really closely. A lot of the action and a lot of the talk has been over in the Senate with Senator J.D. Alexander and some of the fights over the budget and USF. But I wanted you to talk about Speaker Dean Cannon over in the House. He's been a lot quieter this session. Tell me a little bit about what's going on in the House and what Speaker Cannon really wants.
Speaker Dean Cannon is one of the more interesting figures in the Florida legislature, and he is so because we don't hear a lot from him. He has one of the best, tightest-knit staffs, very loyal to him, people that have been with him through his 8 years in the legislature. You haven't seen the turnover that you've seen in the Senate president or the governor's office. He comes from Orlando, is a very conservative individual, and one of the major questions at the beginning of the legislature is, what does Dean Cannon want? And now, as we're coming to the last week, it's, what is Dean Cannon's legacy? And unfortunately for a lot of political observers, that still is not necessarily known. We have to keep in mind, and I think that this is one of the interesting ways to look at the legislature. You got to remember, these guys are devout conservatives. If no bills pass, that's a good thing to them. And so Dean Cannon, before session, said there isn't a lot of bandwidth, and that was the quote he used, bandwidth, to get bills passed this legislative session. He was focused on redistricting, and he was focused on the budget. And that were his two; those are his two constitutional requirements. And as far as he's concerned, getting those two passed really was the only thing that he wanted to get done. He had a couple of other smaller priorities: PIP reform, some money for UF and FSU and tuition, and then some smaller, what you'd call turkeys or pet projects that have gone through over the weekend. But all in all, Dean Cannon has been very quiet this legislative session, but that doesn't mean that he's not extraordinarily powerful. And in this coming week, I talked to a senior House staffer last night. He made sure to point out that the House cannot take up any more bills on third reading, the final reading for a bill, after today. So anything that's not in the House's purview now is not going to get there. The House has passed over 350 bills over to the Senate. The Senate's passed, I think, 65 bills back to the House. So again, there isn't a lot of bandwidth for getting things done this legislative session.
Now, we know a lot about what the Senate wants, right? Senator J.D. Alexander wants an independent Florida Polytechnic. He wants $300 million taken out of the university's reserves and used this year in order to help balance the budget. So they have priorities, and they're asking for these things. And what you're saying is, a lot of this is on Speaker Cannon, and he has all of these. He has a lot to trade. The Senate wants a lot. What will he get in return for giving them some of what they want? What happens during the horse trading?
J.D. Alexander certainly is the biggest name out of this legislative session. A lot of people don't know about J.D. I think there was a great quote about J.D. who said that from his farewell address last week, he said he was going to retire and go talk to citrus trees. He's one of the scions of the Ben Hill Griffin family from Polk County, and that's driven a lot of what he's wanted to get done. J.D. Alexander is the budget chair. That makes him as important as anybody in the legislature, save the Senate president and the Speaker of the House. And so at the end of the day, especially during these last 2 weeks, when everything gets done through conferences, J.D. really takes on a special role. The unfortunate part is J.D. just is not a very strong communicator, and he has had to deal with a rebellion among Senate moderates Paula Dockery, Mike Fasano, and especially Jack Latvala. These moderates have basically put a brake beginning last year on what are called conforming bills. And what happens is you pass budget amounts and you say, all right, we're going to appropriate $400 million for this and $500 million for that. But you need so-called conforming bills kind of as the implementing language. The trouble is, people like Jack Latvala have noticed that the conforming bills create things that are not necessarily what was originally negotiated in the budgets. Now, this is very inside baseball, but that's what the big issue was last session when there was a meltdown at the last couple of during the last couple of days. And that's what's happening again now, is that these conforming bills, especially written by J.D. Alexander, are not necessarily what was originally agreed to by the conference chairs. That creates a lot of tension between those conference chairs and J.D. Alexander. And so with 5 days left to go before the session, you have to wonder, will they get done on time? One of the technical rules of the legislature is the budget has to have a 72-hour waiting period, which is kind of interesting to me, because these same legislators don't believe in a waiting period for handguns, but they do believe in a waiting period for their budget.
So on the House side, things are very disciplined, if not a little bit vague on what Speaker Cannon is going to want. Meanwhile, we're seeing for the second year in a row an open rebellion of Senate moderate Republicans against the Senate conservative leadership. What's going on there?
I have a very interesting point that I make when I go to Tallahassee, and I say that the people that are in charge in Tampa Bay are not liked in Tallahassee, and the people that are in charge in Tallahassee are not liked in Tampa Bay. And it begins with the moderate senators, Jack Latvala, Mike Fasano, Dennis Jones, Paula Dockery, and believe it or not, Rhonda Storms. Somehow, arch-right conservative county commissioner Rhonda Storms has matured into a center-right state senator. These state senators have formed a bloc and oftentimes allied themselves with the few Democrats that are left in the Florida Senate to do whatever they can to slow down bills that they don't agree with, such as the bill to privatize prisons in South Florida. And now we see it. The big issue today is going to be what's called the parent trigger. And the parent trigger would allow for parents of students in schools that are failing to resorts to almost any means necessary to get their students out of those schools, which is, as some opponents of the bill believe, a roadway to increased vouchers throughout the school or throughout the school system. All right, so all of these moderates together have banded up with the Democrats and created just enough of a roadblock against the Senate leadership, Mike Karadopoulos, Sarasota's Mike Bennett, J.D. Alexander, and they have slowed down the Senate to the point where nobody is exactly sure who's in charge up there. There was a little bit of palace intrigue the last couple of weeks on who would be called the Senate President Designate in 2014 and in 2016, and the people that were supposedly going to be those people ended up on the losing end of that battle, and now the moderates have retaken the Florida Senate. I think one of the things to remember is, and I think this is very true about the moderates in the Florida Senate, they've been around a long time. You look at Dennis Jones from Pinellas, he's been around for 32 years. You look at Paula Dockery, you look at Jack Latvala, these are legislators that are on their second and third decades in the legislature. And so they say often about how it used to be in the Florida Senate and how members used to treat each other. So they're easy people to root for in the battle between the moderates and the conservative leadership.
Peter, you know who's been really quiet during this whole session? Governor Rick Scott. What's his role going to be when the lawmakers go home? What do you think he's going to do? Is he going to exercise his line item veto pen? Is he going to approve or cut down this new Florida Polytechnic? What do you think Governor Scott's going to do?
Well, you're very quiet when you have 33% approval ratings. And that's what Governor Scott went into this legislative session with before everything got started. One of his main priorities was an extra $1 billion for education, but that was a misnomer. It wasn't an extra billion. It was $1 billion taken from healthcare funding, from Medicaid funding, etc. And he has seen that priority achieved, but at what cost? I don't know if he's going to be a big fan of the 12th University at Florida Polytech. He has said that he's not sure if the state university system can support a 12th university. He's a data-driven person. I don't think that he's going to look at the numbers and see. I don't think he's going to look at the numbers and see a need for a 12th university. But he may have made a deal with J.D. Alexander on the $1 billion for education. Their swap out may have been for the 12th university. So again, this is going to be one of those decisions that's made over the next week. It's going to have to be made actually within the next 24 to 48 hours when we see the final budget. if it doesn't get passed, these legislators may be coming back in a couple of months, or excuse me, in a couple of weeks. One of the things that's also happening this week is redistricting is coming to the head. The Supreme Court will lay out its rules about whether or not the legislature followed Amendments 5 and 6. And so all of this is coming together like you almost see two or three trains coming together. You know that they're going to collide. You see the villain tying up the damsel in distress along the railroad, and you wonder, is someone going to get there in time to untie her?
Peter Schorsch, the man behind stpetersblog.com, the award-winning website, thanks a lot for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me today.